Welcome to another episode of Pod for Good, a podcast where we learn from those doing good in the world, why they care, what we can do, and most importantly, what you, the listeners, can do. Pod for Good is produced and edited by Random Productions, which is me. It can be found anywhere you get your podcasts. I am, as always, your chief philanthropod and class clown for social emotional learning, Jesse Ulrich.
And I'm your vice admiral philanthropod and class clown for enrichment, Chris Miller.
And today our guest is Lauren Sivak, executive director of the Opportunity Project.
We talked to Lauren about the Opportunity Project's upcoming fundraiser. We'll share information in the notes. The significant loss of federal funding for all enrichment programs and the differences in traffic and parking between Tulsa and Chicago. The important stuff.
Yeah. Only the hardest hitting traffic news here on Pod for Good. Please enjoy. Lauren, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
So I imagine a lot of our listeners probably have already heard of the Opportunity Project, but can you give us a brief, quick summary about what the Opportunity Project does?
Absolutely. At the Opportunity Project, we believe that young people succeed and our communities thrive when we invest in expanded learning. And so the OP is Tulsa's lead agency, and we feel really proud of our ability to steward resources effectively, equitably across Tulsa to ensure that every youth has access to high-quality, enriching after-school programs.
And so when you say expand learning, you mean after-school, summer school, all the times when they're not supposed to be in regular school?
That's exactly right.
All right. You were talking earlier about that you're from Chicago, right?
Yes, I am. I moved here in July 2022.
And you were also a Tulsa remoter, correct?
I am a Tulsa remoter. I guess I'm an alumni of the program, but my wife, then girlfriend, she's a boomerang. So she brought me to Tulsa for the first time in 2017. So I often say I fell in love with a Tulsan and then I fell in love with Tulsa. It did not take me very long on that first trip to want to move here. And I said to her on our drive back to Chicago, our 10 and a half hour drive, that's if you don't get caught in traffic.
Right.
I think we should move to Tulsa. And she, like a good boomerang, said, absolutely not. It took the pandemic to say like, oh, I think our lives can look a little different. And very few things that I'm completely right about. The move to Tulsa was one of them.
I'm a boomerang myself. I spent 12 years in Boston. And yeah, after a while you're like, yeah, big cities are great, but man, I would love to be able to do laundry and stay in my apartment or house.
I want a backyard. Yeah. That was the big thing for us. You know, we had a 900 square foot condo in Chicago, and it was lovely until it wasn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there becomes a moment where I just started thinking about like what our quality of life could be. And I've not had to make any sacrifices in moving to Tulsa. I've had the opportunity to say goodbye to some things like traffic or, you know, the biggest lesson I've had to learn is I don't have to actually leave 20 minutes early to get to where I need to be.
Yep.
And I don't have to park at the first available parking spot. Lessons learned.
Yeah. I know. There's a part of me that wishes that more people who live in Tulsa would have to experience bigger cities.
Yes.
So that they would realize, one, learn how to drive and park a little bit better, but also realize how good that they have it.
Yes,
I feel like people who have never left Tulsa talk worse about Tulsa than anybody else.
Sure. That's right. That's right. I will say also the downtown area has some of the cushiest parking spots because they are enormous.
Yeah.
The spots I would try to squeeze our car into in Chicago.
Yeah. And people here don't, I mean, I was just talking to a police officer about this actually. Like, Oklahomans in general don't know how to use the horn properly. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll sit behind someone who's not noticing there's a left-hand turn green signal going, and people are afraid to use the horn. I'm like, no, the horn has purposes.
Yeah. I have noticed that. There is there's a spirit of generosity. That's what I like to call it. The person in front of you who's not turning, or my wife has had to explain to me when you're turning left, you pull out.
Yes.
So that you could take it.
Yeah.
When the light turns yellow or red.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
No.
Spirit of generosity is what, and I would say thank you for being safe. That's how I'm rewriting that in my
nice
brain.
The only time I ever drove in Chicago, I do remember that the horn started long before the lights ever changed. It was almost like a preemptive horn. Like, I'm just making sure you're already paying attention so that when the light does turn, you're ready to go.
Yep.
My wife recently or one of her friends who grew up in Tulsa. They went to Union together. She has always lived in Tulsa, but she was traveling through Chicago for one of her kids had a tournament, and they were on the Edens in traffic. And she sent my wife a text that was, "Oh my God, you are the strongest person I know. I can't believe this is the traffic that you are sitting in on a regular basis, but it's painful."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 One of my favorite sayings from my dad, who grew up in Brooklyn, was like, "Tulsans love nothing more than slowing down for a yellow light." he's like, "Tulsans love stopping at red lights. They love it." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, in Boston, like, it was yellow even when it was red.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least for a good 15 seconds. Yeah. And you know, you live there long enough, you're like, "I've already been sitting here for 15 minutes. Like, I'm done. I'm done with this."
That's right.
And so that's been our traffic segment of Pod for Good, which is always a good
segment brought to you by.
Yeah, right.
Brought to you by Allstate. No.
So can you give us some examples of what types of enrichment programs that you all support?
And how they relate to traffic. No.
Oh, gosh. I really wish I could come up with one right off the top of my mind that is traffic related. I'm not going to do too much of that. Uh-huh. So within the Expanded Learning Initiative, that is what we are calling our partnership with Tulsa Public Schools, where we are administering resources to make possible these after-school programmings that are happening in 56 schools across Tulsa Public Schools. And so within that, we have programs that are led by youth-serving organizations. And then we also have after-school programs that are led by teachers and in-school support staff. And so we have a wide breadth of everything from Global Gardens, Gaining Ground, SWAT Meet, Tri-City Collective, but we also have educators leading cheer club and anime and chess clubs. I was at a soccer club administering this survey called the Survey of Academic and Youth Outcomes because we believe that youth should have a say in their after-school programs. And like one little kiddo wrote, "I love my basketball program. It taught me to stay in it and work at improving." Like really great things are happening. Mm-hmm. And what I think is particularly exciting to me is we're leveraging the credible messengers in these school communities. So we are in addition to bringing in all of these different youth serving organizations, right now there are 30 youth serving organizations who we're collaborating with. But we're also listening to the teachers who are saying like, "Hey, it's really important for my kids that they have access to a cooking club," or the middle school students here would love to have access to robotics or sewing, because in some ways, like the teachers are who mm-hmm. these kids know best, and it's helping to improve the relationship between the student and the educator in a non-learning environment, even though it's all learning, right? But the stakes can feel a little more accessible in an after-school environment.
Yeah. What you all do is you partner with the people who are in the community, the organizations in the community, teachers, and help and support them to create these programs to serve the youth in the schools.
Yeah, that's right. I think for the op, we believe that after school programs should be high quality. And so certainly we know high quality programming is existing everywhere, but we're kind of the folks that can go in and verify that a program is high quality because we've been trained as external assessors through the Weikert Center and the Forum for Youth Inquiry. We use nationally recognized tools. We're also, you know, I used the phrase earlier, like stewarding resources. So it's really important to the op that students across Tulsa Public Schools have access to after-school opportunities. So we are using our data system called TIDAL, Tulsa's Integrated Data for Expanded Learning, to track attendance. Now, it's a really robust attendance tracker because what I can do is pull up an interactive map and see after-school program availability by school district, by city council district, so I can ensure, hey, this district has less opportunities. We need to dial in and figure out, is there an opportunity to tap into the teachers, in-school professionals? Can we start partnering with some youth-serving organizations? And so once we do this assessment of the landscape, then we are entering into agreements with these organizations and these teachers. So we're making sure, A, that they are trained professionals going into the classroom, that the programs themselves are high quality. We are administering the survey so that youth can tell us what they think about those programs. And then we're offering professional development and continuing partnership resources along the way. And then it's kind of a rinse and repeat. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the barriers you run into when you identify those areas that need more programs,
It's always funding.
Okay.
And any youth serving organization is going to tell you that. For every one youth who is enrolled in after school programming, there are four waiting. And that is an Oklahoma statistic. So that means that we know that we've reached over 8,000 youth through our expanded learning initiative. It means there are a lot of young people who are waiting or who don't have access to expanded learning opportunities. And so with more funding, there's an opportunity to strengthen the youth serving workforce, because I don't believe that youth workers should do free or cheap labor, mm-hmm. right? And if we want to ensure that the folks who are interacting with our young people are high quality, trained individuals, well, they need to be compensated for it. And we can't do that, can't compensate them well, certainly, without funding.
So I want to take a step back for a second. So the Opportunity Project came into being in 2017, right?
That's correct.
So before that, when people wanted to do after school programs with students, they had to go to whatever school they wanted to do the project at. Like, who was was there no middle person? Was there no organizer of it before then?
You know, I think I wasn't here in 2017. The only thing that I can go off of is my own experience as somebody who's led youth serving organizations, which is what I did in Chicago. And that was the model, right? I go to the school and I say, hey, I've got this after school program, or I have this in-school residency program that I'd like to bring to your school. And we might have that tough conversation around funding. Surprise, in Chicago, as is in the case in Oklahoma, those teachers who wanted to bring us in would have the hard realization that they don't have a budget for this. Mm-hmm. And so then me, as the person trying to deliver the program, then goes to the funder and says, hey, I have this elementary school, or I have this middle school, or this high school, or I'd love to build this partnership. Can you help fund it? Mm-hmm. One of the obstacles is often, and this is a pretty big gross generalization, but within philanthropy, you might have builders of programs and buyers of programs. And so like a builder of program might be somebody who is more amenable to innovative thinking. Okay, great. I'm going to give you some seed money to explore this idea and figure out if anything comes of it. For some funders, they would like to see a program that is already up and running. But the obstacle there is I can't get this program started without funding. And so the op started with funding from the Wallace Foundation, where we were working really deeply with 7 schools and overseeing their expanded learning programming. And then COVID-19 happens. And the op, like every other nonprofit, has its COVID chapter where everything shifts, right? And so like one of the things that I often talk about is in Chicago, theaters pivoted, not just to maintain relevancy, but to better serve their communities. And so missions kind of went out the door, and you had theaters opening up their lobbies as mutual aid destinations, right? That's certainly not in the mission statement of Steppenwolf mm-hmm. Theater Company, right? So the op goes from depth of programming working with 7 schools to breadth of programming working with 63. So we had to expand quickly.
The Opportunity Project sounds like a very innovative way of handling a large public school district that is going to have lots of schools and lots of desires from different students to do different things. Mm-hmm. And I'm amazed it took this long for, are there other, do you know of other organizations in different cities that are kind of like the Opportunity Project?
Yeah, there are intermediaries doing similar work across the country. And I think one of the things that has become, Jesse, you're absolutely right. Every school district should have an organization like the op, because the amount of labor it would take for the district to enter into 30 MOUs with youth serving organizations mm-hmm. and 145 agreements with these in-school professionals who are leading the after-school clubs is a huge administrative lift. I'm not even going to talk about all of the partnerships and professional learning and the data collection that we're doing in addition to. Just the I'm going to get you to this school at this time and make sure that the school knows that mm-hmm. you're coming. Huge.
Yeah, I mean, just a reminder, especially at least in Tulsa, Tulsa Public Schools employees and teachers are already massively overworked. So it's not like they would even have the time to do this if they wanted to.
Well, I think that that's one of the things that makes me really excited about the after school programs that are led by in-school educators mm-hmm. And in-school support staff. We had 157 folks apply to lead after school programs through what is historically called Team Tulsa Expanded Learning Supplement, what next year we're going to be calling Tulsa Enriched.
Better. It's less words, it's better.
Less words, better. Yes. We're just trying to streamline it for our audiences, but we pay teachers to $25 an hour to lead these after-school programs. That is significant. And we also provide a supply line. We also provide stipends for professional development. We had one teacher last year who received a check from us in December, and she called my colleague and said, you know, left a voicemail. I don't know why did I get this check? Am I allowed to cash it? I'd love to cash it. Can somebody please remind me why the app is sending me this money? And so my colleague, Sandy Boyacki, who is the point person for all of these teachers and support staff, she calls her and she said, oh, well, this was the after school club that we're paying you to lead. And the teacher said, oh, I forgot. I thought that was something I was supposed to do for free. And that is not unique to this teacher.
No.
Yeah.
And so for some of our teachers, if they lead an entire school's worth of programming, that's an extra $2,100 in their pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, just thinking my experience in high school, my rugby coach was a volunteer because it was a school club, you know, which means the school's not going to fund it, but it's still affiliated with the school. And he even actually helped fund for some of the kids who couldn't afford equipment. When we tried to start our own club in high school, the teacher volunteered his time to do this after school, was not getting paid extra to do it, you know, and I feel like that. For a lot of people, they just assume, oh, yeah, the teachers are just going to do it, and either think they're getting paid or think it's appropriate for them not to get paid to do it.
Well, and we find ourselves reliant on, I guess I'll say, the spirit of generosity, bringing it back, where that we expect folks to do it. And we especially expect folks who are already underpaid to continue to do free labor.
Yeah.
My sister's a teacher. My mother-in-law's a teacher. My undergraduate degree is in English education. And so not only do I think about the taxing on the club leader, but I also, one of the things that is on my mind is, well, how do I ensure that this program is here next year? If I've got these young people who are in third grade, who are a middle school student wrote on one of those surveys, this is where I feel like I belong. What would it do to that young person if next year that program doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah.
Right? And so then who feels the burden to keep the program going? The teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're like me, you might hear estate planning and go, ugh, gross. You might think to yourself, I'm not sure why I'd bother with that. Estate planning is only for the uber rich.
Tallgrass begs to differ. Tallgrass founding attorneys Laurel and Riley think everyone should have an estate plan. They know estate planning seems untouchable to a lot of folks, like something you have to do inside a stuffy law firm of Stuffy McLawyer Pants Esquire.
But I promise you, Tallgrass is nothing like that. For one, they work out of their home so their clients can feel at home. They obsess, because they're nerds, over making clients feel like they belong and are supposed to be there. Also, their kids might make an appearance. They will take time to answer all of your questions, even the uncomfortable ones. They will work relentlessly to make sure your plan's exactly what you need to feel secure and at peace.
So if you've been putting off planning for what's going to happen after you've gone, it's time for you to give Tallgrass a call at 918-770-8940 and start your plan today. Or visit their website at tallgrassestateplanning.com and schedule a free initial consultation. For free! It's right there on the website.
And of course, there's more, because this is a podcast ad. If you tell them you're a Pod for Good listener, they're going to take 25% off their service fees. Just tell them Pod for Good sent you. Stop thinking estate planning isn't for you and give Tallgrass a call today at 918-770-8940 or on their website, which I'm not going to read out to you again. It's in our show notes. Thank you, Tallgrass. I just want to let our listeners know, if you're wondering what club Chris and I started in high school, this is very important. I'm very proud of it still. It was called CRASS, Citizens Responsible for the Appreciation of Social Satire. The school did not want that group. And
Well, first, if you remember, first we tried to start a club that was just going to be us watching The Simpsons.
And that's because Booker T had a Simpsons appreciation club, and that's why I tried to get started. And this one vice principal wouldn't have it, so I came up with Crass.
There was no opportunity project to vet how great our club was going
to
be.
Advocate on your behalf. That's right. one of the questions we ask, is what type of clubs would you like to see at your school?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm now imagining the hilariousness of us trying to fundraise for that. That would have been something. Let's talk about the fundraising issue, because especially like coming out of COVID, there was a lot of money thrown around, and
yes,
and so the Opportunity Project and a lot of nonprofits had some extra funding, and it's now 2024, and some of that funding is not continuing. And so, can you talk a little bit about the challenges that the Opportunity Project has upcoming and how people can help?
Sure. You asked earlier what is one of the biggest challenges? It is funding. Congress is not renewing ESSER funds, which is elementary and secondary school emergency relief specifically for after-school programming. And so we're grateful for our partners in the district. Tulsa Public Schools has invested $10 million over the last several years in expanded learning. That's 3 years of incredible investment. We are reaching over 8,000 youth in school year 23-24 alone. But because those funds are not being renewed, we're going to see those millions of dollars that had historically been invested year over year no longer become available. And so if any of your listeners have a big bucket of money to the tune of $3 million, I'd love to talk to them.
I'd love to talk to them too, honestly.
Yeah. Okay, we can talk to us. We'll have another podcast. Yeah,
our millionaire listeners, please reach out.
But one of the ways, if the common listener, right, is thinking about how can I support expanded learning, it is as an advocate. It's getting involved with your school board. It is calling your principals and asking them, hey, do you have a sense of like how many after school programs in Tulsa Public Schools? Because that's who our partnership is with. But ESSER funds going away is going to affect all of the districts everywhere. This is not a problem that is unique to Tulsa Public Schools. It is one, the phasing out of ESSER dollars and the impact it will have on expanded learning opportunities is going to be far reaching. And so we at the Opportunity Project right now are really trying to think through how can we continue to support expanded learning in our community? How do we democratize the assets that we can provide and that will help somebody secure funding, right? So that it's data analysis and collection, it's professional learning that would come at a cost, it's you making available these nationally recognized tools, but also I feel pretty deeply that expanded learning cannot fall on the shoulders of any one entity, right? It shouldn't fall on the shoulders of the philanthropic community. I think what we're going to need is the new localism approach of leveraging the assets of the public, private, and philanthropic communities. And so that means that the folks in our state legislature are also going to have an appetite to fund expanded learning opportunities across Oklahoma.
Well, let's say if that last one doesn't happen. let's just say hypothetically, if that last one doesn't happen, I know you, I don't know when we're going to end this episode, but now that I know that you have a fundraiser coming up, I might move it forward, but you have a fundraiser coming up on April 25th. Like, I know like one fundraiser isn't going to recuperate all the funds you need, but like right now, like how much money does the Opportunity Project need to keep doing the work it has been doing?
Sure. To only work in TPS, right? In the spirit of transparency, our budget is going to shrink. Right now it's $3.9 million. Next year it's going to go to $900,000. And so a huge amount of our budget for fiscal year 24 is going to youth serving organizations and the after-school club leaders for what will be now known as Tulsa Enriched. Our fundraiser our goal is to raise money for Tulsa Enriched. As you can probably imagine, there are not a lot of organizations fundraising on behalf of teachers to lead clubs. That is a mantle that the op feels like we can take up and hopefully do effectively and in a dream world continue to expand, because we want to support all of the districts and schools in our community as best we can. If I could wave a magic wand for what my annual budget would be to provide expanded learning to Tulsa, because we exist in Tulsa, even though we are heavily in partnership with Tulsa Public Schools. I mean, we're looking at a $6 million to $9 million budget to maintain the current, like say right now we've got those 450 after school programs, we're reaching 8,000 youth, we don't want to lose momentum. It's $2 million. That's what I need.
All right.
And our fundraiser is next week. But
tickets are $25.
Tickets are $25. But I do believe, you know, I think the money exists, right? There's very few communities, and in most of our cities across the country, that there is an opportunity to invest in your education system. And supporting expanded learning opportunities is one way to help Tulsa thrive. I think that the vitality of Tulsa has to be interwoven with an education system that supports youth before, during, and after school.
Well, and I think this, for lack of a better word, creates a good opportunity for people who do want to support Tulsa Public Schools, because our state makes it very difficult for people to provide excess funding directly to schools.
Yeah, get on that soapbox, do it.
The funding mechanism that Oklahoma uses is very complicated and makes it very difficult for a community if they want to directly support their schools. Actually, they make it nearly impossible. If you give more money for teacher salaries, the state will pull that funding out of your allocation. So this is a way to directly support the education of our young people that eliminates the ability for the state to pull that funding away from our community. So for all those people that are looking for a way to support our education system, this is a great way to do that.
Oh, and I was going to say, like, the Opportunity Project hasn't really had to fundraise before, right? Like, that was never one of your priorities because of the way the original funding started. So, like, this is new to you.
Right. Right. We don't have a robust model for contributed income. Our funding for the Expanded Learning Initiative is earned restricted revenue. And it's also difficult to fundraise at a moment when you're overseeing expanded learning opportunities for 8,000 youth. So we've wanted to ensure that we're not losing sight of that priority, the programmatic responsibility that we have. And also, we have operated with a bit of tunnel vision. And my background is in nonprofit leadership, so I am relatively new to Tulsa, so I'm still trying to get the Rolodex of those who have the affinity, propensity, and capacity to support expanded learning. I know not every donor is going to want to fund after-school programs. I'm trying to find those who do, because a $3,000 investment will provide 15 youth with 28 weeks of after-school programming. That's an investment of $200 a youth. Those folks exist.
Yeah.
You want to sponsor a school, it's $15,000. You want to sponsor a feeder pattern, we're looking at $60,000. You can place 5 Tulsa Enriched After School clubs at those schools to the tune of $200 per youth. And then it ends up being like less than $2 an hour for quality after school care. You're not going to find that anywhere. Mm-hmm. So when I think about also not only the impact of phasing out of ESSER on young people and on the youth serving workforce of organizations and in-school professionals, the impact on working families. During my first couple of weeks with the op, I was visiting a couple of schools for site visits, and I was chatting with a fourth grade student who was waiting for her chess club to begin. And she said to me, if I wasn't here, I'd probably be home alone. That is not unique to her. Mm-hmm. And that problem will only grow next school year. So those donors, those millionaire donors who listen to Pod for Good.
Yep.
Are many.
Well, I have to imagine they're listening because they're trying to think, what is the next nonprofit?
What should I give my money to?
Where should I give my money to? Mm-hmm. The thing that I will often tell folks, because one of the curiosities is, well, why do I give money to the op instead of just giving it to the youth serving organization? Right? That's an obstacle. That is a storytelling obstacle that I have to get better at. One of the things that has been communicated to us is the op is a resource multiplier. So some of that money that comes to us is going to go back into the community, and some of it is going to, again, democratize assets that they otherwise, these organizations and leaders wouldn't have.
Well, like, you know, I was at one of your trainings for Tri-City Collective, because we were going to do a podcasting workshop in schools. And I noticed there was a representative from the Tulsa Zoo there, right? Mm-hmm. The zoo, which also has to do a lot of fundraising too, because it ain't cheap running a zoo. Like, I imagine if they couldn't find another resource to help pay that one person to go to a school, like they wouldn't send that person. Yeah. They don't have that extra money. So my argument to giving money to the Opportunity Project is like, you can support both, but like supporting one doesn't guarantee an after school project, you know? Like giving money to the zoo doesn't guarantee there's a Tulsa Zoo after school project.
Oh, right. Absolutely. And also, you know, one of the things that I've been working in nonprofit for a long time. Anytime I've wanted to do like a professional learning or development workshop, I needed to write a grant proposal, and I needed to find funding, which if I was trying to find funding, that takes time from the other thing that I'm trying to do.
Yep.
Right. So now we are making available nationally recognized professional development opportunities rooted in positive youth development that costs thousands of dollars to send somebody to.
Right.
Any youth-serving organization has access to them for free. And we also provide for some of our larger partners. We'll say, hey, do you want us to do structure and clear limits for your team? Would you like us to do supporting youth in struggle or youth voice? So we'll do these for entire teams, again, to the tune of $0.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that is kind of the point, that your organization has the expertise, the skills, and have developed capabilities that each individual organization, it'd be cost prohibitive for them to do the same thing.
That's exactly right.
It's the same argument for United Way, right? Because United Way is able to do things at scale in a way that some of, especially small organizations they support, would never be able to do. And so they provide, it's more than just here's funding, here's paying for something. It's here's support, expertise, and training that you would otherwise not be able to get. And so everyone is better at what they do.
Yep. I think about the number of organizations who might apply to a funder to, you know, I need to develop a new data system to track the youth that I'm working with, right? And some, like, they might pursue Salesforce, they might pursue any number of really expensive programs. Mm-hmm. Our program is free, and it's already integrated with PowerSchool, which is the district's student database system. Now, student information is confidential, but what you get access to as an organization is real-time data about the youth that you're serving, so you can make informed decisions about quality and equity, but also chronic absenteeism is on everybody's mind. You can measure the average daily attendance in your class or your program and use that for grant reports. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to do that with Salesforce because it's not integrated with PowerSchool. And so to your point, yes, by all means, if you want to fund a bunch of youth-serving organizations to set up their own data system, I'm not going to fault you for that, and I'm not going to fault them for wanting to maybe create a new system for themselves. But the robust system already exists, and it does the things that they want to do. And our partners like 9B know this program really well. So 9B also might be your partner on that grant narrative. And so they're similarly trying to direct folks to Title, because Title, like our professional learning opportunities, is something that would be unbelievably expensive if it was not offered by the app.
You've worked in nonprofits. You know, like sometimes the leadership of a nonprofit will focus on something like a new data management system because it's like something new that they can point to, and it's easy to, it's, it might be easier to fundraise for, but like, it's not necessary, nor will it be useful to you if you don't actually use it.
Yes.
And so using a system that other organizations are already using, then there's then resources on best practices and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's great. Shout out to 9B.
Well, we have, the comparative data, right? So so at the very least, one of my dreams is that any funder in Tulsa who funds an after-school program includes a requirement. You need to be using Title. It's at no cost. Yes, it's going to take some time, but you know what? You as a funder, you're probably going to want to know how many young people they reached. Is a spreadsheet on Excel going to do? Like a sign-in every week? Like, no. Like, Title is actually something that, you know, I can't say that Jesse was here today at my after-school program if Jesse wasn't at school, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a student safety thing. It's also like we're verifying the data. Yeah. But the other thing that it does is we're plugged into this map that shows us where kids are tuning into their after-school programs and where are their potential deserts in expanded learning. Mm-hmm. And then we get to poke at why. Why isn't anybody going to this community? Do teachers know about Tulsa Enriched? Is there a way for us to like go to the youth and say, what are you interested in? Right now, the last time I did the survey, there was a kid who was really advocating hard for Slime Club. Probably maybe like a little grass club.
Yeah.
And he convinced, I had like 9 kids write Slime Club on what club they want to have next school year. This kid
love
was it. Politicking.
I love it.
Listen, like you teach them the chemistry of how to make slime. You can make slime.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anything can be educational.
Yeah.
Kid raised his hand this week. Can I have paintball? And I was like, boom. Oh.
Interesting.
Great.
Yeah.
I think that's, well, write it down.
Yeah. It's exercise, hand-eye coordination.
Like, yeah.
I mean, there's probably some legal issues you may have to work through.
I started thinking issues. About the paintball from, this is a throwback, 10 Things I Hate About You. Just like the, you know, like balloons of paint.
Yeah.
But like,
okay,
how do you work towards it? Because you can't send kids covered in paint home every week.
Every week.
That's true. Yeah.
But
true.
I bet you. Mm-hmm. High attendance for that club.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Maybe laser tag club, right?
Oh, less that messy. Fun. Yeah. We are dealing right now with an environment that is very complicated, sometimes hostile towards education and educators. So how do you navigate that environment and make sure that these clubs and organizations are creating safe and inclusive space as part of this education?
My team is trying to cut through the noise. Because so frequently, that's all it is. And it's a distraction. There's a lot of attacks on social and emotional learning. And that's what some of our work is based in. Because for us, a kid isn't going to want to come to school or an after-school program if they don't feel like they're included. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand the aversion to inclusion. Because that's kind of a no-brainer to me. You know, there's an attack on Castle's 3 signature practices. And, you know, that's a warm welcome. So saying students' names, welcoming them into the environment, it's offering brain breaks so that kids aren't just being, you know, you'll hear in some school board meetings, I want my kids to learn how to read, I want them to learn how to do math, and that's it. I believe in brain breaks. I also believe that a school environment is an opportunity for a young person to figure out who they want to be in the world, to experience a sense of belonging. And we have optimistic closures, right? Like I wish, when I think back on some of my chemistry classes, I wish it had ended with an optimistic closure because the next day it was really hard to come back, right? But like the Castle's 3 signature practices doesn't just exist in one environment. It should exist in all environments. Mm-hmm. And I mean, quite frankly, when I have somebody over to my house for dinner, like I might not call it a warm welcome, but when I greet somebody, I'm greeting them by their name, the hug at the door, welcoming them into our environment, right? Like I'm thinking about what is the experience. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes really tough for me when trying to figure out like these attacks on the school system where like folks just want young people to feel included, experience a sense of belonging, feel safe. Mm-hmm. And so I continue to bristle at all of the things that we're navigating and our school partners are navigating and our teachers. And can we say SEL? Maybe we should add the and. Because social emotional learning, that sounds weird. But what if we call it social learning and emotional learning? Maybe that'll be okay. And it's like, well, we don't you want young people to learn how to interact with other people?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there are great quotes on like SEL for the workplace.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to wait until somebody's post-college to figure out, like, how do I team up with somebody to work on a project? Mm-hmm. It's baffling to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, so much of the, I'm trying to not focus heavily on, like, how do I package this? Because I do believe we all want the same things. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, it's going to be really hard to keep doing the work.
Yeah.
So when there is some of the, I don't want to write something off as vitriol because I want to believe like we are in it for the same things, but maybe there's a breakdown in communication and we just got to get there.
Yeah. It's hard. Cause if you stop thinking that, then you're just like fighting a losing battle against the forces of darkness. But I've always believed that a well-educated populace is important for democracy. And so, and democracy requires interaction and democracy requires like different kinds of knowledge. And so we're not training little automatons, right? We're training people to be people mm-hmm. and how to learn different skills. And, you know, if Chris and I as high school teachers didn't give us the slight freedom to like enjoy ourselves as two class clowns, like we would be very different people today.
Yeah.
So, and I certainly would have gone to grad school if education was made just remote learning and rote learning.
Yeah. It's like the difference between being able to enjoy food as a nice, delightful meal versus it being fuel that I just eat to get me through the day. Education should not just be fuel to get you into the workforce. And it feels like that's what some people want, just to say, okay, you should learn the bare minimum you need so you can be a good worker when you get older.
Yeah, I don't know, when I look back at my education experience, and it will surprise no one to know that, like, I was a good student. I was never a rule breaker, but I didn't go to school because I was looking forward to my AP English class. I loved AP English class.
As did we.
Mrs. Corey, Vera Corey, has left an imprint on me that will never go away. But I went to school to be with my friends. Yeah. I went to school for theater, right? I went to school to do golf afterwards. When I was in elementary school, I went for craft club.
Yeah.
Right? I went for these things that made me feel a little more human. In a way that, like, in second grade, learning how to spell pneumonia didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And I still remember, that is a core memory that I have, a spelling bee and getting ass pneumonia.
I failed out. Spelling bee at with cemetery. I spelled cemetery wrong.
I just lost to Mary Loughlin at every spelling bee that we had growing up. So
shout out Mary Loughlin.
Yeah, shout out to Mary Loughlin. Very smart. Always first chair on saxophone. It was for, the learning became fun because you were learning with people you enjoyed being with. I want to hear those rundown of numbers again, because I feel like when someone hears like $2 million, they're like, well, I can't help there.
Right.
But when you broke it down by like smaller groups, like that was really effective. And I want our listeners to hear that again.
Great. Yeah.
And then add how they can directly help.
Yes.
Great.
With that.
Direct donations can be made at theop.org.
Yes.
www.theop.org. You'll see a nice blue donate button in the right-hand corner. So thank you so much. So we're looking ahead at next year. We are going to continue to support youth-serving organizations by, I keep saying the phrase, democratizing resources. We'll keep doing that. We're working on this year-in-review report where it'll have, like, by the numbers, how many folks are organizations reached, what youth are saying about those programs, and then we do these things called the program quality assessment. For funding next year, the OP is going to be funding after-school programs led by educators and school support staff. And so to provide 15 youth with 28 weeks of after-school programming, it costs $3,000. $2,100 goes directly into the pocket of the teacher. The additional $900, right, is reallocated to the community. It covers professional development, it covers supplies, it covers the data system. But that $3,000 investment essentially provides 15 youth 28 weeks of after-school programming, which is $200 per young person. That's a huge impact, right? So if you're somebody who wants to sponsor a program at a single school, $3,000. Say you want to sponsor a school and you want to place five programs there, it's $15,000. If you want to sponsor a feeder pattern, which for us, that's two elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school, then that ends up being $60,000. One of the things that we feel really strongly about is if you come to us and you say, hey, here's a specific school I want to support, great, we can make that happen. Maybe you come to us and you say, I want to support this school, and that school's already heavily funded. Well, the OP can say, let me talk to you about these other schools. What's the impact you're trying to make at school A? Well, I'd love to talk to you about school B. And then for the feeder patterns, one of the things that we are working towards is this idea that when a young person goes to school, they expect expanded learning opportunities. And so they expect it from kindergarten through to graduation. And so that's why that feeder pattern model is really exciting. And to the tune of $60,000, not all that expensive.
Wow. Well, no. Thank you for that. I think we are going to move up the publishing of this so it comes out before your fundraiser. So I can.
Oh, that's delightful. Thank you.
I can do
you.
A small amount. I can do the small amount again, except for our millionaire listeners. Please send your money to the op. But
how else can they connect with the op?
Yeah,
great. You can connect with us on social media. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
It's Twitter.
It's Twitter.
It's Twitter.
We're on Twitter. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. You can go to our website. The other way that you can really support us is if maybe you have the time, but not the treasure. We have an advocacy toolkit on our website that has stats about the phasing out of ESSER funds. It has images that you can post to your social media. Many of those images include stats from nationally recognized resources and organizations. We're going to be getting yard signs that say after-school programs support working families, invest in after-school programming. So if you're somebody who wants a yard sign so that folks know that you care about after-school programs, we'll be having those available and also a bunch of stickers. But we need everybody to be advocating for expanded learning, because if that chorus is not robust, then I just sound like a, somebody who's trying to have a good night at karaoke.
And so if they want to contact their local government officials, asking them to support this, they can find information on your website on what to say and to do?
They can find information on that not only links to our website and advocacy that's really specific to Tulsa, but we are in partnership with Oklahoma's Partnership for Expanded Learning. And so that includes Advocacy and Lobbying 101. It includes storytelling tips. It also includes do's and don'ts. So if you head to the op's website, theop.org, and you head to our advocacy page, it really is a one-stop shop to help you advocate for expanded learning.
So for all our non-millionaire listeners, you can do what Jesse and I do well, which is be loud.
Yeah. And we are good at that. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been great.
Thank you. This was such a great way to spend my afternoon.
Good. Glad.
Thank you all for listening to our conversation with Lauren. Please follow them on social media, get involved, donate if you can, and go to their trivia fundraiser event on April 25th. It's going to be at McNally's. It's going to be amazing. And if you're going to follow them, just take 5 more seconds and follow Pod for Good on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, please subscribe and share so that other people, so we can finally get some of those millionaire listeners we talk about in this episode. Thank you all for listening. Tulsa, remember, get done, be nice to each other out there, and use your horn when appropriate.